All right, tonight we have David introducing our speaker.
David, alcoholic addict. I was here in these same seats and doing the same thing, thinking the same ideas. And I guess the only thing that I want to say personally is that each one of us has an extreme amount of value, and our life becomes extremely more valuable, even though we feel like this shit is nerdy and it's, you know, I don't want to live that way. It's out of your hands, man. It gets so cool. And one person that stood with me and helped me out was the guy we're here to listen to today. We call him Swoozy, but his name's Jason Wilkins, and he's a real scumbag. And I think we can all relate to him, and he's actually one of the best people I've ever met in my life, and I love him very much. So, Jason.
Hey, my name's Jason. I'm a scumbag. My name's Jason. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Thanks, Dave, for saying that. You know, it took a long, hard road to get to be a scumbag. No, just kidding. Chris, thank you for asking me to come out, man. I appreciate that. You know, it was kind of cool when Chris asked me to speak, and he asked me what, he gave me a bunch of dates and what Sunday I wanted to come out, and I had a bunch of stuff I was doing, and certain dates, and then this one came on, and today, June 4th, 2005, I went into treatment in Hawaii. That's where I got sober, and I had moved out there to die. I moved out there to drink myself to death. And, you know, prior to all that, life, of course, and stuff, but when the idea that I'm gonna fucking die now happened, I wasn't ready. And I went into a treatment, much like this one. It was state-funded. It was a shithole. I saw my counselor 4 times in 5 months. I'm not saying this is a shithole. I saw my counselor 4 times in 5 months. One of those times was to tell me my insurance had ran out from my job, and I had to make a decision, so I quit my job. I worked in a brewery. And so I quit my job and I stayed in treatment. Today I have 12 years. That's a long fucking time. Excuse my language. I know there's a bunch of kids around, but I have a tendency to curse a lot. 12 years is a long time. I know some of you are going like, I can't do that. Because I know I said that. For years and years, I couldn't put 30 days, 60 days together unless I was locked up. you know, and I say that because I walked into my first meeting at 14 years old. So I've been coming in and out of the rooms of the 12-step programs for 26 years now. And I only have 12 years. You know, so it took me a long time before I was able to finally hear a message. And basically, it was a long time for, you know, basically get my head out of my ass. So I'm from California. And no different than anybody else's story. Dysfunctional family. Mother's an alcoholic, I didn't know my dad for a long time, all that stuff, all the same kind of things. but I took my first drink about 5 years old. and my mom was having some party or whatever, and I went around and I had the glass and put in everybody's little tiny drinks that they left in one glass and went to my closet and I drank it. It tasted like shit. It tasted horrible. It was probably every liquor you could imagine in that thing. Watered down sodas and whatever else. But what it did for me was I took that drink and I felt it warm me up. And I remember this. And it warmed me up and kind of started to make me feel pretty good. Then it made me sick. You know, 5 years old. And so I kept doing that, interesting enough, throughout time. over and over again, I'm doing that. And little by little, as I got older, I start rebelling. I didn't like rules very much. Still don't. And I started getting involved, or actually, my sisters are probably in high school at this time, and they start getting involved with speed and weed and all this stuff. And I remember being about 8 years old. We were watching double feature at the drive-in, Night of the Comet and Teen Wolf. And horrible movies, right? Actually, Night of the Comet's really good. And I shotgunned me some of the joint, right? I liked that. It was pretty funny, and I couldn't stop laughing for hours. And that was kind of, I like to say that was kind of the beginning of the end. Without going into a whole bunch of the drunkalog stuff or the drugalog stuff, this is how it all started. Little by little, I started experimenting with cocaine, with speed, and all this stuff. And sixth grade, junior high, 10 years old, I'm doing speed pretty regularly. And drinking and all this stuff and the rebellion and me and my mom and family aren't getting along. And, by 14, I'm on the street. I get kicked out of the house. And kind of never looked back pretty much from that time. So there were some things within that, so my brother was an old punk rocker. About Chris's age. No, just kidding. I remember hearing a song coming out of his room. And that song kind of changed everything for me. It was by a band, Black Flag, and it was a song called My War. Now, at 8 or 9 years old, however old I was when I heard that, what war did I have going on? Right? But the music itself gave me some expression. And so during this time, I started getting involved with some people that were of like mind. And just so happens we were all punk rockers and metalheads and all that kind of stuff. And living on the streets, kind of those people became my family. And so, having that family and still having that same family, or at least some of them, those that are alive, means more to me than anything. And sometimes they were more important to me. They were more of a family to me than my actual real family was. The thing with it is that lifestyle allowed me to continue to use, to drink, allowed me to continue to be homeless. And, you know, so kind of with that, I started hopping freight trains. And I started hitchhiking around the country and hopping freight trains and all these things. And I've been from L.A. to New York to Canada, deported from Canada, you know, all these things. Been to jail all over the place. And during this time, I'm starting to wind up in these rooms. You know, first time I went to an AA meeting, I was to support a friend of mine, and I was drinking in the back. And I was heckling people. For some reasons, I kept winding up back here. I started going to treatments. Actually, let's back up a little bit. I started going to tough love groups. Remember that? My first teacher was the drummer from this band, Circle One. My first drug counselor. Chris might know him. Which was kind of the funniest thing. You know, I look back at it now, and it's just like, what a small circle this really is. You know, so started living on the streets, going to treatments, doing lots of drugs, man. My story's really no different than any of yours. Some of the faces are different. Some of the stuff I may have done is a little bit different. But whatever I was doing, you know, whatever drug I was doing, what it was doing was a feeling of void. And it was feeling a void within myself. You know, in the big book, it talks about men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. That's it. It's the only reason I drank. It wasn't because I came from a dysfunctional family. It wasn't because I was homeless. It wasn't because of anything. It's because I like the effect produced by it. Period. Now, I wanted to put blame on all that other shit. You know, and for years it was all that. But when I finally began to look at it, that was it. Right? I like the effect produced. I like what happened when I put something into my body. just like as I like the effect when I get a paycheck. Right? Everybody likes that, right? You know, so as I'm going in and out of the rooms, as I'm going in and out of jails, and as I'm going in and out of these things, I'm listening to people. I even get sponsors here and there, start doing some work. But then I look up at the steps, and the steps aren't on the wall over here, but at step three, actually it goes back to step two, right? Power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. Came to believe that. Well, I couldn't believe that. I wasn't raised in a religious family. We didn't go to church except maybe on an Easter to make my mom look good or something. I had no real upbringing that's gonna point me in that direction, right, of God. And then, of course, living on the streets, I saw all these things that were going on around me. And all I could do was put the blame on God. Right? Why would God take my friends? Right? Why would God allow, you know, children to be on the street? All these things. War and all this kind of shit and blah, 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 blah. All these things we talk about. So that was the one thing that always tripped me up. Tripped me up to the point where I was never able to continue with the steps. Right? I was blocked by my mind. And so I'm in New York in 99, 2000. And I was with a friend of mine, and we had been carrying this blue satin couch, or satin, no, it wasn't suede, velvet, that's about right. We were carrying this blue velvet couch from stoop to stoop to stoop for like 3 days. In like a 2-block radius or diameter. I didn't do too well in math. I sold speed to my math teacher. And so we're carrying around this couch and we're panhandling everybody that's coming out of a building. And we're doing this for days on, 3 days or so. And beer after beer after 90, every 99 cents we wouldn't got another beer, pretty much, for days. And during this time, I mean, throughout this time, I've drank a lot. I was drinking more or less a half gallon of vodka a day, if not more. I'm going through seizures. Me and him would have simultaneous seizures. The DTs have been for years. You know, the big book talks about trying to blot out that intolerable situation as best as you could. The way I looked at it was that intolerable situation became very tolerable. Very tolerable. To the point where going through DTs was normal. Going into seizures on a regular basis was normal. Getting dope sick was normal. I just dealt with it. And of course I did whatever I could to not allow that to happen, right? I'd rob people, I'd stole from people, whatever, right? Beg on the street, right? Flying signs. you know, I look at people today and I give money. I give cigarettes, I give food whenever I can because I was in that position, right? And that's important to me because of that. my mom always gets mad. Why are you giving them money? I'm like, Mom, I was homeless. They're going to go buy drugs. So what? That's what I did. You know, so during this time, you know, I didn't speak to my mother for about 10 years. And for those of you that are mothers, I'm sure that's pretty hard to understand, not being able to speak to your child. The only time she would ever hear from me when I was in jail, or collect call drunk from some state that I was in. She got a call that I had 24 hours to live. I was in the hospital. I had staff inside of my eyeball. It was spreading to my brain. No idea how I got it. And she said, okay, if something happens, let me know. Of course, that infuriated me even more. you know, so me and my buddy are in New York, back to the couch. And we're doing this, and we make a decision. Probably one of the first decisions I've ever made, and that was, let's go drink ourselves to death in Hawaii. He was from there, and we wanted to get in the most isolated place so no one can stop us. And so we made our way out there. He got there before I did, and I took a little bit longer because I was hopping trains and stuff, and he wanted to stay in Kentucky to try to get back with his old girlfriend, and that didn't work. And I made it to L.A., and I was talking to a friend of mine today who was there at that time. And she's like a sister to me. You know, and she was telling me today at how, you know, when she saw me at that time, how she thought she was never going to see me again because I was going to die. she had never seen me that sick before. And, you know, to hear her today say how proud she is of me for staying sober, but also for the fact that I get to help a lot of people today. And she's, you know, she's suffering from lupus really bad, and you know, she does her best to help others as well. She knows the importance of that. And so to hear her say how proud she is of me means something to me, and especially when that time I seen her, I never thought I'd see her again. And she never thought she'd see me again. So, make it to Hawaii. Almost drowned the first day. Well, my buddy showed up at the airport with a half gallon of vodka. What do you expect? And we move into this $4 million mansion. It was like, rent was like $4,000 a month. It was ridiculous. His brother was a real estate agent. And we had just endless supply of booze. It's when I get the job at the brewery. What a great job for an alcoholic. And, you know, I was posted on Facebook, you know, of course, you know, 12 years sober, you do that kind of stuff. And I wanted to hear stories. So I had people were putting stories on there. And a friend of mine that I worked with at the brewery, he was like, whenever I would walk in, you know, first thing I would say is, okay, well, give me a beer. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, right? And then if I couldn't be found, I was in the walk-in drinking beer. And that's just kind of how it was. And I would sit and drink a half or fifth of vodka before 8 o'clock in the morning just to get to work, just to be able to get to work. Normal. It was normal. During this time, I had a lot of friends die. Heroin overdoses, mixing heroin and booze, all these things, murders, you name it. And I was just kind of fed up with shit. And so I just, you know, I kept drinking away, I kept drinking away, I kept drinking away, you know. In Hawaii, there's a lot of ice, and so I started, you know, of course, getting back involved in that mess, and to the point where it's an epidemic out there. It's literally stripped a culture of its culture. You know, it's sad. And this goes on and on and on for 4 years. Until the day I asked for help. And the day that I asked for help, I remember it like it was yesterday. Woke up, drank some booze. Someone had some weed, so I smoked that. Ran into a friend who I hadn't seen since right when I moved there. He had some coke. Went and bought a fifth before work. And this is all, again, before 8 o'clock in the morning. I should be high. I should be high, I should be drunk, I should be something. And I wasn't. And I was still sick. And I was making my prep list for the day. And I'm looking at the paper, and it's like ants all over the paper. And I threw down my prep list, and I walked into my boss's office, and I said, I can't fucking do this anymore. I need help. I need help. And this is a dude who, that Christmas, I tried to fight at work. Because I came to work Christmas Day, drunk. And I didn't want to hear what he had to say. I don't like authority, right? So I went to treatment. I didn't learn anything in treatment. And this is probably 7th treatment, something like that. scattered treatments across the country. Went to treatment after the whole eye thing, and a couple times in L.A. I don't know where the fuck else I was at. So I went to treatment, got a sponsor. So this is when things begin to happen. So that guy that I was sitting on the couch with, the velvet couch, velvet, right? He had just gotten sober. He had a year sober. He got sober in New York. And because he left me in Hawaii, bastard. And, you know, he had about a year sober. And right before that, the previous time to speaking with him before that, I was in New York. He had 30 days sober. I talked to him, and I was pissed. I was pissed. And I told him I was going to spike his water. Told him I was going to spike his water, because that's how we drank it. Right? And so he had a year sober. And he had new teeth. Right? He got his teeth done. He wasn't shaking, or at least so bad. And he could talk. And he could talk kind of eloquently. It's like, wow, what happened to this dude? Now, I had known quite a few people that had gotten sober. But it just wasn't for me, man. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do the whole God thing. I did not know how to live without it. And so he introduced me to a group of guys. We had my first home group. It was a men's meeting on Maui. And this was a rowdy group of guys. They were some shit talkers, man. And they were good people, and they still are. But I'd walk into that meeting wearing a Slayer t-shirt or something, and, you know, they start talking about God, and I start yelling at them, fuck you, fuck your God. You know, I want nothing, I don't want no part of that. And I struggled. Even though I didn't want to die, and I was on the verge of fucking dying, the doctor said before I went to treatment, you keep drinking, you're going to die within a month. I was jaundiced, hepatitis, my liver was pretty inflamed, I was bloated, like it was happening. And I still didn't think I was fucking powerless. I still thought I could manage my own life. But I asked this dude to sponsor me, and I asked him to be my temporary sponsor, because I had heard that somewhere before. And he said, okay, do you want temporary sobriety? And I had to think about that. Of course I told him no. Why did I do that? And he was my sponsor for the next 5 years. This was the first man who was able to read this book with me in ways that I could understand. And he was from Brownsville, Texas. Right? He was 18 years old when he got sober. I'm like, what the fuck does this guy know anything about, right? 18. Well, you know, he helped me out, man. He's about this tall. He says he's Guatemalan. I don't know. We used to give him a bunch of shit. Still do. But he helped me. He helped read this book with me in ways that no one had ever done before. Helped explain it to me. Helped me interpret it in ways that I can understand. Stayed sober. Kept going through these steps. I did a four step. I actually did a fifth step. An honest fifth step. And it took a long time to get there. The steps 2 and 3 were hard for me, right? Because I couldn't believe. I couldn't come to believe. I think she's heard this story a little bit. And so I remember being at step 2 and we get in this argument. We're driving, we're lost in Maui in this truck. And trying to go back to the treatment center and we're off in some rainforest. Right? Most beautiful place in the world and I can't believe in God, right? It's the funniest thing. And so we're talking about God and we're talking about God. And he looks at me and he says, "Motherfucker, who are you? Who are you to say there is no God? You're just a drunk, a junkie, a crackhead, and a street rat. Who are you to say there is no God?" Well, I didn't really have an answer for that one. But from that moment, he gave me some exercises and some things began to happen and some things began to change. And he told me to start praying. Didn't want to do that. Didn't want to meditate. Didn't know how to meditate. Just sit there. I can't sit there. You've got to be out your mind. You can't just sit there. Gave me an egg timer. I would sit there for like 2 minutes at a time, and then 3 minutes, and then 4 minutes, and then 5 minutes. I don't need the egg timer anymore. Now I can do it for, hours on end. And I've done it for hours on end. You know, when we read How It Works, it talks about, you know, demanding rigorous honesty. And that's what this thing, you know, if I'm able to get honest with myself about me to someone else, to me, which is, you know, something I had never really done. If I'm able to get honest with me about me, can things happen? And I got honest and I did that fist step and something fucking happened in that, man. He asked me, "Is there anything that you're not willing to, you know, that you left out of here that you're going to take to the grave?" And of course there was, and I told him. Couldn't believe I told him. And, you know, that today, that the thing that I had left off was the most powerful amends that I've got to make to this day. That happened very randomly. But it was important. Something that I can't share here, but it was important for me to finally be able to say this, for me to finally be able to forgive myself for this action. He had me go do 6 and 7, go sit and get quiet for an hour. Of course, I had to hitchhike back home to the sober living house, and then I had to go to work. So I go and I sit for an hour, and I look at all my inventories, and I get quiet, and I read 6 and 7 and the 12 and 12. It was all great stuff. Then I have to go hitchhike to work, and I made it with 2 minutes to spare. And if you've ever hitchhiked, that doesn't happen. It does not happen. Especially from one side of the island to the other. And I started making amends. And I started doing this work, man. I started doing these things that they tell you about in here, that Chris is telling you about. And if you have sponsors that they're teaching you to do, what they're teaching you to do is to take action. Right? They're teaching you to take action. To trust. To believe in yourself. which is something for some of us, if you're anything like me, was hard. It was hard. The only thing I've ever known is sucking on a bottle or a pipe or sticking a needle in my arm. That's all I've ever known. Right? And so my sponsor, throughout all this time, we talked a lot about spirituality, and we talked a lot about spirituality, and we talked a lot about spirituality. There's a lot in this program about spirituality. And so I had to continue to seek this power greater than myself, right? My first conceptual idea was small, but it was big for me at that moment. And over time, that got to change. Every couple of years, I go through these spiritual shifts. You know, today that relationship with God is the most important thing in my life today. It is. And how I practice and how I do is very different than how I did before. It's changed. It's grown. It talks about in Jim's story, in Fred's story, in Bill's story, to perfect and enlarge your spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others. I started sponsoring people. I started talking to other guys about God. That was kind of the weirdest thing for me. But from that, it grew and it kept growing. And you know, 12 years later, it's still growing. I work with a lot of people. I work in the treatment industry, and I talk to a lot of guys, and I talk to them about their problems and all this stuff, and I talk to them about the solution, and the solution of not just the 12 steps, but the solution of being able to trust and rely upon a power greater than yourself. You know, my sponsor didn't give me the whole thing of, you know, do your nightly review and call me and email it to me and text it to me or all these things. You know, every time you do a 10-step, call me. Like, he didn't do that. Because he taught me how to rely on God. He taught me to trust and rely on this power. And so I talk to guys about that. You know, they'll come to me with a problem. I'm like, all right, go pray. First thing, go pray. What's it say when you do a 10-step? Pray. Pray about it. Ask for the guidance. Because you will get it. Because I got it. It doesn't always look the way you want it. Doesn't. I'm in the process right now, you know, kind of talk about what it's like now. You know, I'm in this relationship that I've been in for a long time, longest relationship I've ever had. And we're in the process of selling and buying a house. And of course, the house sold and we got nowhere to go. So we've been praying for a house, and so we get it. This opportunity and this house comes along, right? Of course, there's a bunch of problems that come along with it. Now, it's kind of a weird problem to have today. I'm so used to, where am I going to eat? How am I going to eat? Which trash can has the best options? Right? How am I going to get a drink? Right now it's, how are we going to fix the septic tank? Fuck, right? You know, a lot of my friends are still dying of this disease, And, you know, where I work, we just had a kid overdose, you know, in a sober living environment. You know, so just because you're in here, just because you're, you know, if you leave here and you go to a sober living place, doesn't mean that you're away from it. Right? It's still going to find you. It's still going to find you. It talks about, you know, cunning, baffling, powerful, as Taylor said, as the book says. It will find that crack. You know, 4.5 years sober, I was suicidal for 6 months. That was the darkest place I've ever been. Not when I was drinking and getting high. I was okay with that. Because the drinking and the getting high was my solution. Right? That was my solution to everything. I didn't quit drinking because I hate alcohol. I didn't stop shooting dope because I hate heroin or speed or whatever. I like it too damn much. I do. I still do. I just can't do it. Because if I do it, I'm sleeping with your old lady. Right? I'm stealing your shit. And I'm sleeping back underneath that fucking bridge. And I don't want to be there today. And, you know, most of my friends are dead. And the ones that I have left, I cherish, man. I cherish today. Most of them are having kids. I love hearing the kids. I love hearing the kids. Because that's where we need to be. Right? Talks about finding a power. You know, we find that this fundamental idea of God deep down within every man, woman, and child. Right? You know, this I don't seek this external solution to my internal problem. Right? That's the closest to God we're ever going to be, right there. Right? So that's what we need to get back to. Pure faith. Pure faith. That child knows he's going to be taken care of. Right? Period. And if we can get back to that pure faith, because otherwise what's going to happen is we're obstructed by all this calamity, pomp, calamity, worship of other things, money, women, men, booze, drugs, stuff, things, cars, houses. Those children don't have that problem. They're not obstructed in the same way as we are. Hopefully they won't be either. Now you guys are probably wanting to get out of here. you know, my life today is fucking amazing. I didn't learn how to drive a car until I was 30. Right? You wouldn't want me behind the car, behind the wheel of a car. I would have killed a lot of people or myself. You know, living in a house, I'm employable. I'm the longest standing member of an organization, big organization. I'm the longest fucking employee. It's been over 5 years. I was there from the beginning, for the most part. helped a lot of people. I'm able to watch a lot of people get sober. Some of them stay sober, some of them come back. I'm still in contact with a lot of people I was in treatment with. Right? That's some cool shit. To see them get their licenses and start taking, you know, being counselors in prisons. And I also watched a lot of them die. Seen people scattered all over the country sober. Helping people. And this whole thing... It's about trusting God so that you can get sober, so that you can go give it to someone else. There's someone you can help. Only you. You just don't know who it is. All right, and that goes for each and every person in this room. Just as much as there was someone that I could help. I don't know why. I don't know why it's like that. It just is. It just is. I was told, how do you get close to God? You get close to His children. Right? And that means something to me today. Because every time I talk to somebody, that's my God talking to your God. I heard that from an old client. It's great stuff. I loved it. Right? Each and every one of us have an obligation to help someone else. Whether or not you know it is an obligation, it is. Because someone's helped you. Because you're alive. Right? Because you sit in this room. Because you sit out there. Right? You know, Dave, thank you for saying some things. And you know, this is a man I love dearly, and I've got to watch grow over the last couple of years. And that's why I do what I do. There's a couple of people in here that I know. And you know, to be able to see your faces makes me smile. Some of you, I hope I'm getting, hopefully I can get to know. This life is fucking amazing, man. I wouldn't do it for 12 fucking years if I didn't enjoy it. Even at that 6 months of suicide, wanting, whatever you, however you want to put that, I stuck through it. And how I stuck through it was I worked with a lot of people. I used my sponsees like my sponsor, because I wouldn't listen to him. Right? Intensive work with another alcoholic and addict. That was the thing that saved my ass. And once I was able to get my head out of my ass enough to actually trust God, I didn't kill myself. This life is great, man. If you really feel that it's going to be boring, guess what? It's probably going to be boring. Right? Manifest destiny. Right? If you want it to be good, guess what? You can make it fucking good. Follow direction. Follow direction. Get through this work. Trust God. Whether or not you believe in anything, that's okay. Because it believes in you. Get through enough of this work to clear away some shit, to allow that power into your life. I heard Chris say some stuff the other day. Or not the other day, a couple months back. Of what that third step decision is, a decision to continue with the rest of the steps. You do enough of that work, you clear away some of that wreckage. It's going to clear away enough that you are and will be able to believe in something. And that's what happened with me. My hope is that it can happen with you. If it hasn't already. I think I've had too much coffee today. So kind of that being said, if any of you are struggling, come talk to me afterwards. It can be hard. It can be really hard in the beginning. Getting sober was the hardest thing I ever had to do. Hardest fucking thing in the world to do. Staying sober, not a problem at all. It's easy. as long as I continue to trust God, clean house, and help others. That's it. Yeah, I go through struggles. I've gone through struggles. Who doesn't? It's a part of life. It's when I'm able to begin to write a new story. Right? When I'm able to write a new story. We love stories, right? We love stories. Right? But we stay stuck in those stories. We got to use those stories to write a new story. Right? Use those stories to write a new one. I'm going to shut the fuck up, all right? So, anybody want to talk, please come better one-on-one than in this stuff. If you need my number, come get it. Unless you're Joey, he can't have my real number. I love you guys, man. I hope each and every one of you can one day be up here telling your story so you can begin to write a new one. All right, thank you.